what society has done is, and modern day feminism, it's made women believe that we're the same as men. And by doing that, it's actually completely re-enslaved us to feeling like we're not good enough and internalizing, I can't do that. I'm feeling emotional. I'm feeling really tired. I want to be a mother. I want to have a baby. X, Y, Z, I'm trying to juggle all this stuff. And now I don't feel good enough, because what that has done is this society has created more of a competition between men and women, rather than the fact that, yes, we're equal. I'm just as equal as a man, and man is just as equal as me, but we're not the same.
Yes.
And so it's really important as well to look at this society around us, because a lot of the time women will internalize their own stuff because we've been taught to behave like men.
Hey, welcome back to Soul Awakenings with Madhya Sosan podcast. Today we have Grace Prosser. Grace is a spiritual teacher and Mary Magdalene womb empowerment healer. With a captivating journey spanning over 8 years, she has dedicated herself to refining her profound knowledge, wisdom, and intuitive spiritual gifts, all centered around helping women heal and empower themselves by connecting to the depths of their soul essence and womb. Grace's celestial calling transcends boundaries, reaching out to women from all walks of life. Whether you're a devoted stay-at-home mom, a driven working mom, a fearless single mom, a child-free woman embracing her independence, or even if you're navigating a 9-to-5 job, part-time work, entrepreneurship, or a student life, Grace is here for you. I am super excited to interview this incredible woman. Let's bring her on. Hi, Grace. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad. At the time we're filming this, we just come out of full moon, and I'm sure you can tell how strong the energy is right now, isn't it?
Yeah, so strong. Absolutely. I mean, the full moon is something that highlights so many different things for us globally, personally, in our relationships, in all corners of our lives. Mm-hmm. You know, it's here to shine the light on things, but also it can be to shine on where you're not truly stepping up.
Yeah.
Those parts of us that are afraid to be a bit too much and a bit too bright.
Yeah, 100%. So I'm definitely feeling this. I'm sure many of our listeners are as well. We actually met through, well, we haven't met in person, but we got introduced by Tim Marner. So I was on his podcast show, and he's like, you know what, at the end of it, he was speechless, because when I was sharing my story, he's like, you know what, you need to connect with Grace. He kept saying, you need to connect with Grace. I was like, who's Grace? Connect with Grace. I was like, all right then. Yeah, he's like, I'm on it.
He hooked us up, didn't he? Oh, I love that. I love it when life happens like that, through just the flow.
100%. And that's what it was, complete flow. So obviously, I know a bit about you. Our listeners don't know who you are. So tell us a bit about who Grace is. What's your background? What do you do?
So my name's Grace Prosser. I'm 35, and I'm a spiritual teacher and Mary Magdalene womb healing and menstrual cycle empowerment teacher. So really briefly, I guess, how I'm here, even though it's a very, very long story. So as a child, I actually grew up in quite a destructive household for about, I would say, about 10, 15 years. So I developed quite a lot of spiritual practices as a child to help me through what I was going through. So things like prayer, opening myself up to guides, and things like that, that I was able to open up to because I really didn't really have much choice, If that makes sense, you know, as a child, when you don't really have choices like you do as an adult, you have to deal with your environment. So it was from a really young age as well, where I would pick up on energy. I would have to learn how to read people's energy, read the room. So I think my ability is spiritually and also energetically started really, really young. In my teens, when I had my first Ments, my first moon, which is one of the most psychic times for a young teenager and a woman. In that time, I recall where I used to make sacred altars. And this was very much kind of like the Indian tradition. So I was creating altars, but I didn't learn these from anyone. I just kind of was channeling something. I would just sit in peace at them. And I believe like around that time, it was something that was just keeping me going, if that makes sense, and having faith and having a belief that there is something so much more powerful within us, you know, the universe, God, the light, whatever you want to kind of call it. I knew from so young, I just knew that it wasn't just this external world that was here. And so, yeah, I was always very emotionally intelligent as a child, more so that way than academic. So it was kind of all about creation for me and expression and things like that. But I guess then life happens, right? You get to a point where you've got to go get a job and figure life out. And that's when I kind of just went straight into the system and got my A levels, got my degree, studied, you know, things like that. And my spiritual kind of connection faded for a long time because it wasn't validated in the world that we live in. It wasn't something that was taken seriously. I couldn't be that version of me because it wouldn't have got me anywhere at that point in my life. And so, yeah, I just kind of ended up on the hamster wheel of life. I actually then ended up working after university in the sex industry for a while. Firstly, I started modeling, and then due to, you know, a bit of blackmail, manipulation through those kind of industries, I ended up on a program called Babe Station, which is an adult chat show. Firstly, I started on the daytime shows, so it was actually more about just communicating with men or women on a really clean, there was no dirty chat, there was no sex chat or anything like that. You were actually not allowed. It was against the law to speak like that on daytime TV. So it actually became more about just creating bonds with these people calling. And actually, a lot of the people that called were very lonely, or they were unable to connect with the world in certain ways through maybe disabilities or social anxiety. So actually, in a sense, there was really good parts of that because these people became almost like my friends, you know. And these men became very supportive, and I would listen to them, and you know, it's almost like counseling in a way, for both of us. And so actually, it wasn't too, you know, destructive being on the daytime shows. However, it still comes with a lot of labels, a lot of judgments, and you know, you are putting yourself in a position where it's more vulnerable. In the end, purely for financial reasons, I ended up going on the nighttime shows, which was more sex chat, you know, completely different. And so I had training with all different types of things, all different types of like sexual energies. We had to learn. We actually had formal training once a month about how to speak, how to move, how to learn about the psychology of the men that were calling and what they perhaps wanted from the conversation. And so I was quite smart in a sense. I had a plan to get out. It wasn't for me something I wanted to do forever. I wanted to create a business. So I set a goal of earning a certain amount of money. And I stuck to that. And I worked crazy hours. Like sometimes I would even do the morning show. So I would be on from say like getting ready at about 5 o'clock. You're on at like 8, 8, 9. And then that goes through till 5 a.m. in the morning. And then I would sometimes do the morning show till like 8, 9 a.m. So it was real hustle culture. It was hustle culture, get your money and do what you've got to do. And so in this time I'd had boyfriends and things on and off, but I did meet a long-term partner I was with. He supported that. And then I ended up leaving and doing like webcam and things like that just to tick me over with money. So I ended up creating my swimwear company where I was designing swimwear. It's always something I wanted to do as a little girl in that like, creative era that I was in when I was young. So I made that dream come true and it did go big really fast. I had no kind of background in retail or finance or anything. But I just winged it, to be honest. Like I really did. But I had a really supportive partner at the time. Anyway, I kind of ended up building this life of what I thought was this perfect life, like the money, the car, the house, the boyfriend, the shoes, the bags, the Botox, the holidays, the everything. And I'm not discrediting that. I think that luxuries of life are amazing. I think it's important that we also value ourselves outside of that. And I just didn't have an idea of who I actually was. And eventually me and my partner kind of drifted apart a little bit because I'd got everything I wanted, but there was something missing. And I was having episodes as well, like really emotional episodes. And I realized my childhood is not spoken about. It hasn't been dealt with. And I noticed it coming up a lot more, the feelings as I got into like my mid-20s. And so the partner I was with, he wasn't the type of person that could hold that. He just wasn't. It was just not in his biology as a man to be able to hold any of what I'd gone through. It was more of a shallow life we were living in. And that's also not to discredit him as a human being because he helped me through a lot of stuff. But for me, it just wasn't deep enough. I needed to go deeper. And I remember being away in Miami for like a work trip, and we were in this like amazing club and these amazing people, and it was just incredible. And I had a drink spilt over me, and it was this red juice, and I just was so angry, like ridiculously angry that this person had spilled a drink all down my dress. And my friend just tapped me on the shoulder and he just gave me like the biggest reality check. He just brought me straight back down to the depth of who I am. And he was like, "Look around, is anyone looking at you?" And I was like so embarrassed because everyone was just having a good time. No one was looking at what had happened to my dress. And he was just like, "We love you." And in that moment, it was kind of like he loved me in my mess. He noticed I was a mess. He just took his time out to just be present with me. And I don't think I'd ever had that before. And so I went to the toilet to like clean my dress up. And I remember looking in the mirror. And like that's when it all changed. I was like, this is my life is this isn't it, my life's done how it was. Like I knew it was done. I didn't know how, but I just knew from that moment that things were gonna change. And I got home and they started to change. And that's when I started to meditate again. I'd not done it in my adulthood life. And I sat and started to meditate in the bath, and then my three angel guides came through, and then they started to give me techniques of healing this trauma and emotion through out of my body. And they asked me to visit them every day in the bath, basically until they said so. So I did. And I kept it quite private because it wasn't really something anyone was really doing or talking about at the time. This was back in, I think, 2015. So it was kind of new. And I just had to go on the journey on my own, really, with just trusting, again, my guides and just trusting that process. And then actually... even though I had the support of my guides, which I think is a really important message for people to know, is even when you're on the spiritual path, it doesn't mean things don't happen to us as human beings. I had these amazing guides helping me. I was healing my body and I was starting to deal with pain and trauma, but my life actually got deep darker after that. I guess they just needed to know I was willing and ready to go through this, that next burning phase. And I was. And so it got darker. I found out my partner was having an affair with a very close friend of mine. And then eventually after that breakup, I kind of spiraled. So I went into more smoking, drinking, not, you know, kind of being here. I was separated from my body. I was so unembodied. I wanted to escape. And so I found that in so many different ways: toxic relationships, sex, smoking, drinking, even porn, things like that. Like they're just easy ways out of life. And so in the end, that obviously caught up with me. It was not going to go. My spirit team were like, not for long. and I was still connecting to them every now and then, but just not very much. And then eventually my company actually took a really dark turn and I lost my money. I lost the house that I lived with my partner, and I actually left the house that I'd bought. And I just left that. Obviously, leaving him and the family and the environment and the friends that I had in that time. And then around that time as well, so company gone, money, family I'd built, relationships, and all I knew was my company. All I knew was Grace, the bikini designer, you know. And so part of my identity was just gone. And so everything was just wiped from under my feet. And I went into like a really deep depression, like dark depression. And I didn't really see a way out. I didn't know how or what. Like I just didn't. It was dark. And so then it got darker. And you would think spirit would be like, okay, but obviously I wasn't quite there yet of being like, Grace, know your strength. You've got this. I lost a baby, and then my sister passed away about 3 to 4 weeks later. And then it was with my grieving process that I was like, oh my gosh, like I'm either going to probably die and not be here, or end up somewhere like I don't even know, or I have to take this seriously. And then it was that moment I was like, I'm just done with that part. Like I'm ready. Like I'm ready to just take this seriously. And so I did, and I made that commitment, that devotion, and I just haven't looked back since.
Wow. Wow, that is quite a journey. I've got so many questions to ask you.
Yeah.
Right, I'll start with, gosh, okay, so I now understand why Tim connected us, because at a point where I sat with myself for 2 years, asking myself two questions: how are you feeling? Are you okay? And that's when all of my trauma would come up and for me to purge. And you went through that as well, that period where I didn't tell anybody what I was doing. I thought I was the only person going through it. I need to purge this out of my body, all this trauma. So can we talk a bit about that? Because not many people talk about the release of the trauma and how it's done, and how do you hold space for yourself in that moment?
Yeah, I think it's going to be different for everyone, isn't it, as well? Who, and it depends what they've been through. I would firstly, if I could give myself advice at that time, it would definitely have been to ask for more help because I did think I was alone on it and I didn't know where to turn to. But I think now there is so much out there for us to help. I mean, there's even podcasts about it, right? Like back then, there really wasn't anything. It was just simply you and spirit. But I think for me, it was a matter of trust. Like it was that simple trust that I was safe to be emotional and let it leave my body. Like it wasn't going to mean anything else other than just what it was. It was like taking the meaning out of it all and just letting it be and letting it release and not having to fix it, but just being with it, witnessing it, and not asking it to even change. It's like sitting down in that version of who you are in that trauma or whatever it is you're releasing, just saying, I got you. You don't need to change for me. You don't need to be anything for me. I'm not going to force you to change or be anything more than what you are. I'm just going to sit and witness you in this. And that way, the energy just is able to release rather than thinking you've got to bend it to release that way or this way or that way or up here or down there. And it's like, witness it, be with it. That's kind of the most loving thing you could ever do because there are not many people from when we're young to now that just sit and witness. There's always some kind of, plan
Distraction.
or strategy. And so sometimes I think that's the most powerful thing we can do is just be like, I'm just going to witness you and you are safe because I'm, this powerful version of me, this higher version of me, this witnessing energy has got you. Like whether that's your inner child, whether that's your inner teenager, whether that's from an adulthood trauma, whatever that part is, all you they usually want is to be seen, heard, and loved.
And
So.
I think it's really important to point out that, it's like our busy lives, we're constantly, like you said, we're on the go, we're distractions, and you had your ways to cope with stuff that you wanted to brush aside, and I had my coping mechanism. But there comes a point where you kind of hit a wall, you can't move anymore. To It's like I say, it's like when you suffer enough, that's when you're going to change your life. And for to witness that you've been through what you've been through, to see that, to really sit here and hear you experience that journey of that transformation, expansion and growing pains and coming out of that, it's like cocoon, like caterpillar going into a cocoon and then becomes a butterfly. It's really beautiful to see.
Yeah, it is nice.
It's like really unfortunate to some people who don't experience that, and then they leave this planet without even realizing their worth and value.
Yeah, it's because of it's the linear process, isn't it, that people are stuck in, and it's scary to sit with yourself and witness whatever it wants to be without
Pain.
changing it. It's not, it's definitely something that you've got to trust the process. It's something that you've got to know isn't all rainbows, butterflies, but the other side is really beautiful. Like, and I think when you do, and when you allow yourself to feel, to heal, that is truly where life matters. Like, it's how you know you're actually alive. When I wasn't feeling, when I was suppressing everything, when I was depressed, I didn't feel alive. I felt like there was something missing. I felt like everything around me was alive, but inside me was dead. And so you've got to feel to be able to feel like you're actually alive, because that's the whole point of being human. It's the whole point of being here. And it is difficult. So for anyone listening, I would always suggest, if anyone ever comes to me, I always ask them, what's your spiritual practice look like first? Because you want to firstly learn how to ground and be stable. Because if you are going to dive into trauma healing work or things that may be coming up for you, you want to have a level of stability in your spiritual, soulful, aspect of yourself. If we don't have that, it can be very easy to get then lost in the spirituality world and not be grounded. And that can actually cause more trauma and conflict and confusion. So the one thing I would do is, the first thing I ever do is, you've got to go back to the Great Mother. You've got to go back to the earth. You've got to start grounding. Really learn how to ground through meditation, through touch, through just connecting with the outdoors, the land. And that's going to be, you're going to thank yourself, for that. Water is a really good way to ground, which I think is why my guides were teaching me through it when I was in the bath. And if you have a busy life, which we all do, and you've got children or a job to get to, what I did is, and what I do now is, I make it my morning practice, because one, it's so important for it to be in the morning, sets us up for our day. Two, you can get up an hour earlier if you really need to. If you're at work at, from midday, you can't take that hour out, but you do have the luxury of your morning and set that alarm an hour earlier. And it's only you that is gonna not make that decision. Like, it's if you're making an excuse, that's where you've got to look at. So I would say the morning time, if it means you're going to be getting up an hour earlier. Meditation, 30 minutes equates to 3 hours sleep. So you're actually getting more sleep. So, it's not going to tire you out. You might be emotions that come up. Give yourself space. And just learn in that kind of way where it's going to fit in your day. Morning or evening is usually best.
Yeah, I usually when I deliver these workshops called The Importance of Inner Healing. So we go through the stuff, where did their emotion started off from? Oftentimes it's with our parents, or like when we're younger, right? So I often get them in a place where they realize, get a lot of insights, but then also they don't want to be dwelling in it in that for so long. So it's like, give yourself time, 15 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, let yourself cry, let yourself be angry, release all those emotions, and then get up and dance or go to the gym or do something. Because that's what I kind of, it feels like when I was doing that on my or by myself, I didn't really see it at that point. But there was a point where I used to be sitting there, I was like, okay, what trauma? Okay, trauma about my dad's coming up. I'm rolling on the floor, crying, grieving the loss of my dad, and then getting up, okay, time to go and play badminton. So it's like, it's finding that balance of not doing to the extreme end, and you kind of find that on your own.
Yeah, and you find your own ways. And like you said, it's about that play. So for me, if I've had a big release, I love to dance. So I'll put some good music on. I just give myself 10 minutes to just dance. Or I love massage and oil. And it's coming back into the body again, isn't it? You're embodying it, rather than it's, because when we're emotional, we can easily escape again. And we want to make sure we're back in the body. So moving your body, going to the gym or things like that, or the oils that I love, or just having a dance or a movement, yoga, something like that. Perfect. I'm so glad that you said that, because it's such an important part of the journey, embodiment.
100%, 100%.
Yeah.
You talked about a sacred altar. So those listeners who don't know what it is, how can they set it up?
Amazing. So I think sacred altars are like really fun, and that you can really bring out your creativity, like your feng shui, your spiritual side. For one, it all depends on obviously where you're living, if you've got children, if you've got space, and also kind of like your culture or your background or your faith or your religion, because, you know, it all depends. For me, I'm like into faith. I love all different kinds of faiths. You know, I have the Buddha, I have Jesus and Mary Magdalene, I have Green Tara, Kuan Yin. So all of mine are Lakshmi. They're all different faiths, Pele. And so I would suggest, firstly, just really stripping it back to like, what's your favorite color? Things like that. What's your favorite smell? What's your favorite color? Go and buy yourself like a beautiful smelling candle that you just adore, and keep that sacred for your sacred altar to worship you. If you're starting off with an altar, I would start off with worshiping you. So this might be like getting a picture of yourself or a picture of your inner child. You might want to write yourself a love letter. You might want to put some like rose quartz there or some beautiful flowers, especially a candle. You might then start adding things to it as you go along. Then you might just get a call in to be like, oh, I think I need like some kind of other crystal, or, you know, or a different kind of smell at the moment. You know, things like that. It's all about really just channeling who you are and how you would worship you, you know. So I have many different altars, but the one where I worship myself, it used to have different things on. Now it has Kuan Yin, because Kuan Yin right now, I'm with connecting with her, she's like, I want to be in your altar. I'm looking over you right now. So then with Kuan Yin, it's like, if the deities or the goddesses do attract to you, and it might not be that they come into your space in meditation, it might be that you just keep seeing them pop up, or you might just have a really beautiful sense of, oh, I really want to learn about that. Then you can just go and buy like a picture, or you might want to learn the mantra for them, so you can sit with that altar and just say their mantra. You might want some nice incense or things like that. And then I would recommend kind of getting more guidance if you're going to go and create different kind of altars, because, for example, if you're going to call in someone like Kali, and create an altar for Kali, then you're going to really want to learn how to work with her energy and different kind of deities. So, because you've got to think of it like this. If you have a tiger spirit guide, for example, and you put a picture of a tiger on your altar, that tiger is living in your home. So imagine an actual tiger walking around your home. It's the same as if you've got Kuan Yin or Kali or whatever it is. So you've also got to be really careful of what you do decide to put on your altars, because you're creating a channel of light. So when you create an altar, you create a channel of light that gives access for the divine to come through to your home, to come through to you. So if you're given permission for a really strong deity like Kali to be on your altar, you need to learn what Kali is about. So it is also being mindful of your altars. So if you're beginning, do it for yourself first. Go with the self-love altar. Worship yourself every day. Go over to it and just, I spray my perfume over it sometimes and just ask it how it is. And I just do a nice prayer and light the candle every day and lighten that part of me up, you know? So I think, does that answer the question?
Yeah, it's perfect as well. It's like it comes through you as well. So you got to be in a place to receive it. right? You know, oftentimes it's like, okay, well, I have this limiting belief, which goddesses works with that? This one, right? And then, oh my God, I'm not willing to work on it. I need to be in that center too for it to come through for me to work on it as well at the same time, right? That's perfectly explained. I remember when I was going through my awakening, which was 2016, it was like such high energy to a point where I ended up in probably in another realm. But there was a goddess sitting. It was what looked like a goddess at that point. She was wearing blue dress, really beautiful. I couldn't see her face because there was like light behind her, but she was holding this like gold, what do you call it? Like a, what's it, a stick?
Gold. I know what you mean.
She was holding that, and I could see her lips. I couldn't see her face. I could see her lips. She's saying something, and I'm trying to figure out, wait, what are you trying to say? What are you trying? I don't know. I don't know. And then I come back, and I'm like, who were you? Who were you trying to give me this message? What was it? What was it? Can you come again? No.
Did you find out?
No, I doubt still to this day. She's probably working behind the scenes, and I have no idea what's going on. But it was very, very, it was so really, really strong, really strong experience.
Were you working through inner child stuff at that time?
I was purging a lot of my trauma at that point. So it might have been.
Because Mother Mary, also Kuan Yin, Mother Mary and Kuan Yin are so, so similar, but Mother Mary is literally blue with that light.
Really?
Behind, and she assists in like the most beautiful, like inner child healing. You know, so her as an ascended master is, you know, I work with her quite a lot, and she's definitely a an ascended master who works with inner child stuff.
Yeah, so
as you described her, I just kind of saw her.
Yeah, so definitely her. Then there you go, puzzle solved.
Yeah.
Oh, amazing. So we're talking about obviously goddesses. So let's get into feminine energy, because you talk quite a lot about feminine energy.
Is there anything you particularly want to kind of know?
How do you tap into feminine energy, and what are your thoughts around it, or you work around it?
Yeah, perfect. Again, so I think we all need to be really clear on what we're born into, for one. So the fact that we're born into a world that is dominated by a wounded masculine system, we're not quite in the divine masculine system yet. I mean, there are people stepping up, but we're actually all born into a wounded masculine system, and that is females, males, or anyone in between. I will put like a thing out there right now to say that when I speak about feminine and masculine energy, it's not gender based. So it's actually an energy that exists within whatever gender you are, whether that's man, woman, anything in between, and all ages as well. And also, if I ever speak, you know, about the womb and things like that, it's always autonomy based. So it is if you are born with a reproductive system that is a woman or a man, you know. So I just want to get those lines crossed with like gender roles and things like that. So if we speak about like the feminine masculine energy, sometimes it is especially in relationships, you can tend to look at like male female gender roles, but they still do happen in like same sex relationships too, because as I said, it's an energy. So as you know this, I would feel like firstly it's kind of asking yourself a question of what do you believe the feminine is. So with my clients, we go through a really beautiful process where I just get them to write down the word divine feminine, and what are the words that come up for you. You know, so anyone listening now can do it. What are the words that come up for you when you think or feel about divine feminine? And they're going to be different for every single person because we're all taught differently. We all have a different belief on what the feminine is, and there is no right or wrong. And so some people might just write down things like goddess and beauty and strength and mother and wise and intuitive and, you know, all these really gorgeous, beautiful energies. But what women 9 times out of 10 forget to do is they forget actually, you know, what is the feminine? What else is the feminine? It's like, but that is the feminine. I'm like, there is way more to the feminine than those. So then we go, I ask, you know, think about yourself, like your emotions, your menstrual cycle. What about when you've manipulated a man with your sexuality? You know, is the feminine manipulative? Yes. The feminine is very manipulative. Is she destructive? Yes, she's very destructive. Is she volcanic? Absolutely. Like, she is, is she a temptress? Of course she is. Like, we have that womb, sacral, like, temptress, destructive, dark feminine energy as well. And so I believe it's very, very important from the beginning, if you are looking at feminine energy, to really get clear that it's not just beauty, wisdom, intuition. It's also all the other things. But those other things are also just as powerful as the beauty. And obviously this is like the shadow and the light, the dark and the light feminine. So that kind of feminine energy on both sides, the dark and the light, is really important for us to really start to accept, because you can go on the journey of leaning into these really radiant feminine parts, but they don't exist without the manipulation parts and the, you know, the kind of temptress and the explosive or manipulation. And it doesn't mean to say you got to be in them energies. It just means you're aware of them because they exist. And for so long, women have pushed them down. And this is what has caused the imbalance. This is what has caused women to feel so unsafe in their emotions, feel so misunderstood all the time, not belonging, because those darker emotions have been told are unlovable, they're not pretty, men won't like them, you won't get a job if you're doing that, like all these different things. But they are part of the feminine. There is no way we can get away from them. So again, when I teach about connecting back to your feminine energy, the best thing you can do is connect back to your menstrual cycle, your womb. It's where the core of it is. And when you connect back to that, you begin to realize the whole spectrum of who you are as a feminine being. And I think that's where the feminine energy can be really transformative in your life. So firstly, getting really clear in your belief system, knowing that there's no right or wrong, facing some of your darker ones and just admitting them. I admit I have a really dark temptress energy, and I have to really like love her a lot, because otherwise she can be quite destructive, you know, and that's not a bad thing. And then look at your relationship with your cycle, because the cycle is the divine intelligence. It's the first thing. It's the first thing that created us. So it has a lot of feminine power for you to connect to, for you to lean into in so many multiple different ways.
Oh my God, this is amazing. I was like, I've got so many questions. Like, I need to go, but like just a couple of questions. So we just started talking about the moon cycle now, your cycle of female cycle, menstrual cycle. So can we talk about that? Because you talk about seasons. Mm-hmm. So I don't think I've come across that. So I think many of our listeners might not either. Yeah. So talk a bit more about that.
Yeah, so I'll go through like the four seasons of the cycle for you. So when I was moving through this, firstly through my Magdalene womb healing, obviously we learn we learn and we're trained in different forms of connecting to the womb, healing those feminine energies and kind of getting a closer relationship with them. And the one thing that is just so apparent, obviously, is the emotions that we get through the cycle, which we all know. And again, like, we're born into a world that doesn't value the cycle. Like, we value a 24-hour clock. So again, I'm going from anatomy when I speak about this, but if you have a man with who has a rhythm of a 24-hour clock within his hormones, so when a man wakes up every single day with the sun rising, the sun being the masculine, the solar, his testosterone levels will rise. When the sun goes down, his testosterone levels will go down. This is why men can kind of like get up and go straight to the gym as soon as they wake up, and they've got this kind of energy that is just there. Biologically, we're so different. What society has done is, and modern day feminism, it's made women believe that we're the same as men. And by doing that, it's actually completely re-enslaved us to feeling like we're not good enough and internalizing, I can't do that. I'm feeling emotional. I'm feeling really tired. I want to be a mother. I want to have a baby. X, Y, Z, I'm trying to juggle all this stuff. And now I don't feel good enough, because what that has done is this society has created more of a competition between men and women, rather than the fact that, yes, we're equal. I'm just as equal as a man, and man is just as equal as me, but we're not the same.
Yes.
And so it's really important as well to look at this society around us, because a lot of the time women will internalize their own stuff because we've been taught to behave like men. We've been taught to work like men, exercise like men, eat like men, do all the things like men. And our inner rhythm does not work like that. We have a 4-week rhythm. So whereas men have one every day, we have one every 4 weeks. So they're very consistent. They're more consistent with their hormones than we are. And this isn't to say that men aren't emotional, because they absolutely are. They also need that space. But we are biologically emotional beings as women, and men are more primally hunters. We're, you know, birthers. And so when we look at the four seasons, we go back to Earth again. So we look at the Divine Mother, the Divine Mother Earth, who birthed all creation, you know, all of the universe. And she is just this beautiful goddess, this Pachamama, Mama Earth. And she has the four seasons, the winter, the spring, the summer, the autumn. So we're lucky that we get to kind of feel those seasons where we live. And those outer seasons are a reflection of our inner seasons and our menstrual cycle. So the first day of your bleed is going to be the first, is going to be day one, and that's going to be your winter, your first day of your winter. So in the winter, you look at the season, you get cozy, you want to withdraw, you want to go inwards, you kind of don't really want to do much, you don't really want to be around too many people, you're on your bleed, you just want to get a nice hot drink. And it's the same as when the winter comes. We come inwards, the days get darker, we go in. And so it's matching up to the season and to our inner season. So giving ourselves permission to be in the winter season of ourselves. And I go off like a 28-day cycle, but everybody's cycle is going to be different. Some people's are shorter, some people's are longer. But you can begin to track it and then see where your cycle's happening. But if I go off of like a 28-day cycle, which is like an average cycle, I go off like 7 days. So it'd be day 1 to 7 is your winter week. Then around day 5 and 6, you're going to start to feel a hormonal change as you cross over into the next season, which is spring. Your spring phase is where you've, exactly like spring, We've come out of the winter and you're like, oh my gosh, the flowers are coming up, the skies are getting brighter, the weather's a little bit warmer, and the days are just getting a little bit longer. And it's the same as your inner biology, what is happening within you. So you start to get this new life inside you. Well, the winter week is where women die through the bleed, through the release of the lining of the uterus, shredding through, you know, your body. It's releasing everything we've held from the previous month. So we die in the winter phase. So of course, like Mother Earth dies, she starts to bloom again in the spring, which is exactly what we do. And so as we're blooming in this spring phase, which is going to be, say, like from day seven up to seven more days, you're going to start to feel new energy come up. And your hormones change again, because you're then going to be preparing for ovulation. So around the end of your spring week is where you're going to start to first ovulate. So your hormones change again. And you can get quite a lot of anxiety in this week, because if you're not preparing for a baby, your body thinks you are. So your worries about money or your house or environment, even your partner, you're going to ask, is everything good enough to bring this baby into the world? Even if you're not having one, your body is preparing for it. Then we cross over into the summer phase. And again, you'll have those crossover days. And this is where your full ovulation, the full moon, is also, if you're not bleeding or if you're menopausal or on the pill, you look at the moon. And this is where the full moon is in your ovulation. So it's more of a masculine energy. You're very much more alive. Things are not bothering you as much. You can get things done. You've got more energy. You're at peak. And so also in this phase, we can ask to be asking ourselves why we're not stepping up into the fullest version of who we are. So sometimes in this phase, we can feel like we're too much. Then we move into autumn phase, which a lot of people know, the premenstrual phase. This is going to bring up, just like autumn where the leaves are falling, this is going to bring up things where you need to release and let go. And this usually comes from past trauma or past relationships. So autumn tends to bring up the past, and spring week ovulation tends to bring up anxieties of the future. So in this week is where you're going to feel the shedding begin. Like, things are going to highlight for you to look at, so you can then release them in the next week, which is going to be your bleed again. So you can see the cycle playing out where women get a full detox. We have like a full map of what we can follow to an extent. Obviously, it's going to change. The menstrual cycle changes all the time. But it's a good map to continue to follow, to just get to know yourself a little bit better. And what I like to do is I started developing something called the Divine Cycle, which was my guides had guided me to channel healing meditations for each phase of the cycle, and journal questions that we can ask to really help us embody each archetype. So a feminine archetype is like our personalities, and we have four in the month that go through the four phases of the cycle, the four seasons. So the archetypes that I channeled through and designed the Divine Cycle is, your winter week is called the womb woman. So you're in the womb and you're in the cave, and it's cozy and dark. Spring week is your delicate divine. So everything is coming really delicately up, and spring feels a bit more delicate, and the babies are being born, the baby lambs and the chickens, and they're very vulnerable and delicate. So are you. So that is the archetype. That is the personality you have. And then on the third week, you've got Lady in Red. So she's your ovulation. She's like the one who puts the red lipstick on and the red dress, the unstoppable version of you. that version, that personality of you that's sassy and fiery and sexy. So that's your lady in red. And then you've got Divine Diva, which is, you know, it says it for itself.
Yeah.
The autumn phase where you might be a diva, demanding, bossy, snappy, angry, rageful, whatever it is you go through. So when I designed that, it just allowed people to understand their personalities as well and the four feminine archetypes that you have within your divine cycle. So does that explain that?
Oh my God, it's like... That while you were saying this, I was watching a video by Teal Swan. I don't know if you heard of Teal Swan. So she was talking about periods. I was like, okay, let me just click on that and watch this. And she was talking about thousands of years ago where women actually used to gather around and they used to get that period around the same time.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And they used to bleed into the earth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
So that's called a red tent. So the red tents first originated in caves. So women would gather in the front of the cave to bleed. So the cave would be like, if you think of the cave as like the yoni, the sacred space, because the word yoni, vagina, yoni, is Sanskrit for sacred space. That's actually what it means. So the caves would be the cave going into the womb, like the female cave. So when you were bleeding, you would gather together there because you would share your wisdom. When we bleed, part of our brain becomes more open to spiritual guidance. So you become more intuitive, more psychic. And it's a time where you want to release your tears. You know, usually on the actual release of the bleed, that's when people tend to kind of cry through not knowing why they're crying. You know, they might just cry at like, saw this thing on the TV and I just cried and I don't know why. It's usually on the bleed. Whereas the tears that come premenstrual are usually tears of anger and frustration. And tears that come after the bleed around ovulation are usually tears of like anxiety. But the tears of the bleed are just these pure emotional tears that they're just with the bleed. And so with that comes a lot of wisdom. It comes a lot of compassion. And so women would gather together to hold each other in these times, to share their burdens, to not judge each other, to share wisdom that was coming through for not only them, but it might have been for the land, it might have been for the community. There was a lot of psychic Christ light that came through on the bleed. So when this developed, it kind of might have gone into mud huts. And then as time went on, it might have been temples or certain places in the villages. But they would be so special and so sacred. If anyone was ever coming into the, village to destroy the village, the first thing that they would burn down was the red tents. Because they knew how powerful these sacred spaces were. And another amazing thing about the red tent, which I love men to listen to this, is that our noble men, they really... really validated our emotions and our cycle. So when it came to the women gathering in the red tents, men would bring us food. They would take it in turns to protect the tents. We would have men outside, maybe on a horse, or you know, we would have our protectors. Our noble men were the men that were holding the space for us, just like the feminine and masculine energy, right? That masculine energy would hold that space for us. They would protect us. They would bring us food. They would make sure we were okay, that we were warm. Whatever we needed, they would bring for us in that time of our cycle because they knew how sacred and important it was for us to honor it and for them to also be honoring it. So, you know, when I teach clients on their bleed, I always say to them in this phase, like, I mean, if you do have a partner, amazing, but this is a really great time to start asking what you need and to give him a chance to step up and be that noble man that he probably really wants to be, but sometimes men just don't know how. And so this part of the bleed is such a great dynamic in relationships because they're the simple things of like, just protect me whilst I'm in my bleed phase. And, you know, men, they do love to be protective. And so the menstrual cycle can really start to help your relationships as well, because it gives you an opportunity to learn so much more about yourself. You're able to communicate it to the people around you. But yeah, that's what the red tents were. Yeah, they're amazing. And I hold a free one online called the Rose Red Tent every 6 to 8 weeks, where women get together and we just talk about this stuff. Like, yeah, and people, you know, I offer women to share their intuitive wisdom and we just sit in circle and just kind of see what comes up. And yeah.
Oh, that's really beautiful, because I'm also thinking about a culture aspect as well. Like, I've been brought up in a culture where we don't talk about periods. It's like, it's something you should be ashamed of. So, it was, you know, when you go to pray, you shouldn't be on your period. So that's like, because my cultural background is Muslim, even though I'm not Muslim myself, but that's the way they it's very masculine based. It's like, well, you should wear white, you shouldn't bleed, you shouldn't it's like, and we don't talk about it whatsoever because it's disgusting, it's a sin, right? And that's how I've been brought up to be. And there is so much shame. I had to work through that. There was so much shame around my belief system and the shame around talking about period, talking about sexual energy, because that's another thing. It's a sinful. You should do it with your, like, behind closed doors, everything, like, you know, but you shouldn't talk about it openly. So I, like a couple of years ago, got into, my friends, Mickey, Owen and Emma, so they teach like a conscious relationship course. And this is me being vulnerable and open, where I'm 35-year-old woman, right? So I've not been in any relationship for that, you know, for several reasons. And when he was talking about the sexual development, and I was like, okay, well, this is gonna be fun. He's like, first stage, shame. That's where it hit me first. And then I realized, oh my God, I'm in shame. And then I was like, thinking about the culture aspect, the limiting beliefs that I've been brought up around, right? And I'm just working through that, just really embracing feminine, because I was masculine majority of my life. You know, I've been not on the go, 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 because I used to, I was living in my own hell. So, you know, many people know my story, where I was suffering from crippling anxiety to a point I could not leave the house. So that was my life for 10 years. In that point, I was masculine enough. I used to game. I used to suppress my emotions, and anything feminine was not in my picture at all, until I had my spiritual awakening. And that's when everything like started clearing. It was like embracing more of my feminine energy than the masculine. I was completely tomboyish, you know, years ago. Yeah, so it's really kind of hit home. Like, I didn't know about this circle, cycles of females. Like, it's just like, it makes perfect sense that we should be shredding, we should be detoxing every month, and we should be moving through that, not let our environment dictate the interfere with that.
100%. Thank you so much for sharing that as well. Thank you so much, because sharing it is part of the healing process as well, isn't it? And just being vulnerable and knowing that there are going to be so many women that literally resonate with everything that you've said. And that's where you've stepped up and listened to your calling, because you are a a leader and a light for those other women, especially in your culture, if that is, you know, how it's been for you. And there's going to be so many women that feel the same. So to just hear somebody being able to be strong enough to just look at it in a different way and be like, actually, I was carrying shame around that is so important for us. And I think shame, the shame healing, there's when you start menstrual cycle like healing and womb healing, because menstrual cycle syncing is great, but that's very logical and structured. There is so much more to the menstrual cycle healing and empowerment. And I think when you really begin to journey into that and through that, like you said, through the bleed rather than against the current of the natural rhythm of the feminine, but actually allowing yourself to flow with the blood, you know, allowing it to flow out of you, just giving yourself permission to, instead of trying to stop it, it's kind of like your shame does come up, because of course this is where we hold the shame, because this is where it's been suppressed for like 2,000-3,000 years. And as you said before, in your culture, which I know to be true, like through the teachings of Mary Magdalene and the Roman Empire and things like that, the female reproductive system is so powerful, it kind of goes against the order of some of the masculine principles of society. So it starts to make you see from new eyes of, oh wow, I can actually really hold more compassion for women. Also, men who are born into this world, it's not their fault either, because they've known no difference but to avoid the period and to think it's disgusting. You know, we've done it. They don't even have one. So they're going off what they've been taught and told, whereas a lot of the time we are blaming men, but actually it's nobody's fault. It's just the society around us, the environments we've been taught to be in. And so the more that I think women start stepping down into their womb, into their bleed, into their feminine energy, the more it's going to help men step up. And it's going to create a better balance between that feminine and masculine, not just on an energetic level, but on a physical global level as well, you know. And it might be a big responsibility for a woman, because everything comes from us. That's a massive responsibility for us. And some people might say that sucks. Why don't men have periods? Why don't they have to give birth? But see, it is the most beautiful gift you've ever been given. If you can start taking responsibility for that, men will start to honor it. But until we start to honor and take responsibility for it, they're not gonna.
100%.
They're not gonna. So it is our responsibility to step down into those, you know, lower regions, rather than being up here in the masculine all the time. It's coming down and being with these really feminine, raw parts of ourselves and learning to heal and evolve through them, so we can teach the next generations, we can teach our partners, they can then teach other people, and the ripple effect is amazing through that, you know. Yeah. But it's not a man's job to do that for us.
No, we got to do it ourselves. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what are your thoughts on PCOS? So I've had that as well. It's quite interesting, because I've used to have my period like 6 months, 3 months, 4 months.
Yeah.
It was all over the place until I, again, had my spiritual awakening. Now it's every month. You're like, you're working through the trauma, getting it out of my system and everything.
So it's one of the, obviously, anyone who's going through anything like that, always seek medical advice as well, you know, like, absolutely. But yeah, it's one of the symptoms of the womb stress and trauma. You know, like, the womb is the first place to react to stress. Our central nervous system, the vagus nerve, starts at our cervix, wraps around the vital organs of our body and to the throat. And so when it comes to stress and things like that and trauma that creates stress, the first place to impact it has impact on is the womb, the uterus, the womb being everything, the uterus, the fallopian tubes, the vaginal canal, the lining of the uterus and the vaginal canal. The cervix is a really, really important space as well because it holds a lot there. It's one of the symptoms of just this buildup of emotion, stagnant emotion, stress, perhaps things we've just not dealt with because it has to go somewhere and the womb is a hollow space. So it has to live somewhere, you know, like, for example, if you were a stress molecule and you wanted to survive, you're not going to go into a place in the body you're going to go to a place that's going to be able to help you breathe. Push it so far down. We push it so far down into the womb space because it's so avoided and so ignored. It's just the perfect breeding place for stress. So we hold a lot of stress there, and that can build up and build up over time. And that is where we get things like the womb symptoms. Endometriosis is really beginning to show itself now in different ways as well. You know, having cysts, irregular bleeds, painful sex, infections like BV, thrush, cystitis, things like that are all pretty much symptoms of some kind of stress that we're holding in the body. And there are many techniques you can do to just, even just at home, to do to start to release, and womb massage, essential oils, breathing techniques, meditation's great, but also embodiment practice, moving the hips, dancing, moving the hips, you know, trying to really release the tension from around the hips and things like that are really simple things. Mantra is really good because anything that is going on within the neck and the throat is usually going on in the pelvis region, the womb, the yoni. So if you've got sore throat, sore glands, there's a fine chance something's going on down here. It might be a lower backache. They're all kind of signs that the womb wants your attention and love. And there is something that wants to be released.
Yeah, that makes so much sense when you said like it's holding that stress. And I was under a lot of stress throughout because I care for my mom. So that's a lot of stress itself. And then suppressing my emotions because I had to be the adult. I had to, tap into masculine, go, 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 helping mom do this, open this can, open this, open, do this. So yeah, it makes sense why my womb kind of just went out of whack because like, yo, what are you doing?
Right. Yeah. And things like when we're under stress, what are the things that people do? Like they might go out drinking or eat the pizza and their diet goes out of rhythm. And then that actually then impacts your hormones, which then impacts your fertility, your menstrual cycle. So it's not only just the cause of the stress, it's what you're doing with the stress. It's how you're reacting to the stress. It's how you're managing the stress. And we're brought up in this society that says, avoid it, go out drinking, maybe go have a cigarette or a vape. Maybe you want to just go and indulge in that big tub of ice cream. And there are so many people that I see online that say, have your tub of ice cream on your period. You deserve it. I'm going to be transparent with people. Do not have that tub of ice cream. Don't have it on your period.
No.
Do not have it because it's going to affect your hormones and your period. I love ice cream, but have it in your summer week. Have it in your ovulation week, in the week where you're not stressed. You know, indulge in those things in the different phases of your cycle. But when you are bleeding, your body's detoxing it. It needs to be purified to release all that stress for you that you've been holding.
So what sort of food would you recommend when you're on your bleed? What sort of things?
Just as kind of balanced as possible, really. It's not about deducting you know, the carbs or anything like that. It's just having that balanced diet. You know, with every single meal, you want to be looking at a carb, a protein, and a healthy fat. And as long as you've got all three, that's a pretty healthy balance to have. You know, if you don't want to keep cutting your carbs out because it's going to give you a hormone imbalance, it might affect your emotions and your stress levels. So you just want a really nice, easy, balanced kind of diet. I mean, I'm not a nutritionist, so there is not so much I can say on that level of things. However, currently in my divine cycle, I have been introduced to a nutritionist. And I'm working with them to try and get something in order to give like a nice food plan for people.
Oh,
But you
amazing.
know, just keeping it balanced, hydration, your 3 meals a day, your breakfast, your lunch, your dinner, a fat, a carb, you know, and a protein. And you'll be good. But you'll know when you get them cravings. You'll know
Just
when you
like
get them.
Just like oh, you just had a thought, like with meat, because are you taking on energy of another animal on hormones kind of thing, do you think?
This is like a really, I guess this is like a really vast thing, and I guess it depends on your personal preference of food, doesn't it? There is theories that we take on emotions from animals, but then if we look at trees, plants, fruits, they're all living energy beings. So, you know, like if you're not going to look after a plant, it's going to die, you know? And if that plant has got the apples on it, you know, that you eat, I think everything has energy. And I think it's just the way you look at it. And again, it's just being in balance and looking at what meat you're eating. So I eat meat, mainly kind of chicken. But if I eat chicken, it's corn-fed and free-range. And I will pay the extra 6 pounds for that because I know that the chicken is being looked after. And ultimately, if it's serving my health and I'm serving people, I need to be, you know, optimal health. Not only with the chicken, will I make sure I buy it like that. I pray and I thank it. And I have a free food prayer online if people want to download it. And I bring some energy into my food. And also, I kind of take the indigenous way of eating meat because I studied, like, you know, the Native Americans, the indigenous, and how they eat meat. And it's like a ceremonial ritual to eat meat. It's something that should be really honored. So getting into the habit of just prayer and gratitude before you're eating the meat, or whilst you're cutting the meat, be present with it. You know, there's a really big difference between just pushing it in the oven and not thinking about it. Being present with that animal that is here to serve you, which is serving your children, your community, the people around you. And I always buy a full chicken as well, so every part of the animal is being used. So whatever's left over, I give to my cat. And I know, like, I feel like I've really honored that animal. And I think it's all about the way that you look at meat and eat it. But perhaps there could be different kinds of elements to overeating meat, perhaps, or too much protein that might give you a bit of hormone imbalance. But I'm not entirely like clued up on all that stuff.
I used to eat meat so much, like in but then I used to be overweight, like you said, like eating that pizza or eating the ice cream all the time because I was like trying to numb everything. And then I completely went vegan for 7 years. I've just got back on meat again. So it's like intuitive eating. It's like my body needed that 7 years of no meat, and then now it's like you bring it back in now. There's not caught up in just listen to what your body's saying. Your body's will tell you.
Absolutely. And don't shame yourself if you eat meat. Like, you know, being a spiritual, the most spiritual thing you can do is be human. You know, it's not about going so far out of your body to an enlightenment part that you're not on earth anymore. Yeah. And that most certainly doesn't make you a better person.
Yeah.
You know, the most spiritual thing you can do is be human. And it's just being mindful, isn't it? It's just really just taking those moments to be grateful for this food in front of us, or, you know, for this, whatever it is you're eating.
Yeah, I often give Reiki to my food. So
that's so great. So do I. I'm like sat in the restaurant. I'm like,
people looking at you, what you're doing. This is magic.
So true.
Oh, love it. So we talked about perspective from men and women, right?
Yeah.
So what if like two females get in a relationship? We know how it worked with male and females. How do they help each other during the cycle?
This is a really interesting question, because I have a couple of clients who are in same-sex relationships. So I've actually asked this question. I was like, can I ask you some questions? Because I would love to know. Again, when I was studying like Native American culture, they have something called two-spirit. And that means like you embody both. Like, you know, if you look at like Native American men, they've got like jewelry in their faces, they wear like long skirts, and they wear their hair in plaits, and you know, they have, you know, all these markings on their face, and they're really not afraid to be feminine in their own ways, even though they're like really masculine looking. And their concept is called two spirit. So they believe we're all born with kind of like, obviously, we've got the anatomy of the gender, but they believe we're just all born as one. So actually, in their culture, they don't see it as any less than if you're in like a same-sex kind of, relationship or something's going on. But they do stick to reproduction. They stick to, you know, reproducing. So for one, I think like, it's really coming back to the energetics, really. And again, social structure that has created this imbalance. But when I was speaking to my client, I asked her, like, how does it work? And she says, there's always one of us who is more masculine or feminine energetically.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't mean all the time, because I think even in any relationship, I mean, I'm a leader. I own a business. Of course that I've got a strong masculine energy when I need to have it. It's also learning that I don't have to be in that all the time. Mm-hmm. And it's the same with the feminine. If you're always in your feminine, you're still out of balance. You've got to step into your masculine at times. It's not about always being in your feminine energy. At the moment, we're going through a radical change on earth where we're coming back into relationship with the feminine, because it's been gone for so long. But it doesn't mean to neglect and disrespect your inner masculine and be like, I don't ever need to be in my masculine again. Well, if you did that, you wouldn't get anything done, and you're probably going to get hurt.
Well, you're creating a healthy masculine inside of you.
You've got to have both. So yeah, she did say I'm more feminine in my relationship, and usually I tend to choose women who are more like the doers and the action takers and the leaders. And
so it does work.
That's kind of what she said. So it was really interesting, but I would like to learn more about that, because I think it's very important. But I think if you actually just strip it down to the energetics, it doesn't really matter what body you're in, because you've still got the energy, the two spirit, you know, it's going to play out. It's going to play out with your pets. It's going to play out with your colleagues. It's going to play out with your parents, your children, you know, it plays out in every relationship we have.
Yeah, I think it's like in a healthy relationship as well that works, like balances it out. Otherwise, if it's unhealthy masculine, unhealthy feminine, then it's like trauma bond right there.
I know, exactly. And like personally, I would always be more of the person that wanted control, and I found it very difficult to be in my feminine without being in control, like an over-controlling feminine. So it wasn't so much I was in my masculine more, I was actually in my wounded feminine of control. And I wasn't in a healthy feminine. But a lot of the men that I will tend to choose are more on that masculine side, because protection, it depends on your morals and values, but like that protection and that leadership and that security and safety is so important for me personally. So I think we do also choose partners based on, you know, that kind of thing. But it doesn't ever mean I can't be the strong one for us if he's having an emotional meltdown. Yeah. Like, men have meltdowns too. Like, they have emotions too. Doesn't mean they're not masculine. You know, it's just really seeing it all from the perspective of who we are and who they are, being one, really. But yeah, personally, I do like a man who's more in that masculine energy, who can give me guidance and lead me into a better version of myself. And then likewise, really respect my intuition, because it's a massive part of who I am.
So it's
having that balance.
I am seeing a lot of masculines going through their healing journey as well. Like, there's a lot of men circles nowadays. It's like they are able to express their emotions, whereas for years they haven't, you know. So which is, we're moving forward in the right direction.
We are, and I think it's because we're expressing ours, because when we express ours and we level up as women, they have to meet us. And the only way to meet us at the, where we're at, is for them to go through the same thing. So if we're not meeting ourselves at those depths, we're certainly not going to meet a man who is going to meet himself at those depths. And we want that alignment, don't we? We want someone to at least be aware of the way that things kind of play out. And, you know, not saying that anyone's perfect, because we're never going to be perfect, but just that nice open-mindedness is a good alignment to have.
Yeah, beautifully put. I've actually got one more question. I've actually also got rapid fire questions for you.
Okay.
But what are your thoughts on birth control? Now, that's a topic where it's 50-50 in the world right now, isn't it?
I think if you was to look at what, if you go and do your own research on birth control, anyone listening, be prepared to read things that are going to trigger you, that are going to make you feel perhaps like you want to be off of it. And also, for me, and looking at other women, it brings a lot of shame up, because birth control disconnects you completely from ovulating. The one thing as a woman that you're gifted with, this one beautiful gift that we're given, this gold. And when you're on the pill for so long, I see it. So many women don't want to face it, because they know that they made that choice to take it. So firstly, please, if you're looking into it, don't shame yourself. You were taught to go on it from when you were 15 years old. It's not your fault. But really do the research, because, you know, it's, for me, I think there's so many better methods of, you know, contraception. And not only that, the pill really does disconnect you from your feminine energy, from your emotions. It might be putting a plaster on your trauma right now and your emotions right now, but long-term effects of taking something like the pill is going to have more impact on your health and your mental health than actually being like, I'm going to go through these next 6 months and wean myself off of this tablet. Go for medical advice, but also maybe look at holistic advice, or someone like me who does the cycle work and the womb work, to be able to guide you through it. Because the first 3 months of coming off the pill is going to be challenging, because you're going to be faced with emotions you might not have felt for 10 years or 5 years or however long you've been on it. But yeah, do your research and know that there is many, many, many ways that you can trust yourself to be on your own contraceptive timeline. It's all about trusting yourself, having that trust in yourself to say, actually, I've got to be careful today. I'm ovulating, you know? So taking responsibility that, okay, if I do have sex and ovulation, I might get pregnant. And then I deal with that. But I think taking the pill can take away our responsibility as women. And I think a lot of the time that can also crush our trust, our inner trust, because our inner trust is what's going to help us trust other people and other things around us. And when it comes to life and giving birth to life and creating life, that requires an element of trust in yourself. So coming off the pill is a massive healing of self-worth, inner self-love, and trust.
Yeah, beautifully said. Really beautifully said. I think it's like also many people are probably on, like, you know, being diagnosed with PCOS, and they go into, I was on it like for a year. I was given the pill to regulate my periods, and I took it, and when I came off, it was worse than ever, emotionally, physically. My periods were so painful. But actually, like, there is hope. There is so much hope, because now that I'm sitting here, I'm telling you guys, like, I get period every month, and most of them are pain-free. And I lost a lot of weight. It's like, it feels great, because I've done quite a lot of inner work, trauma work, a lot of things that you can do outside of just a pill, a lot of holistic work.
So much. It's just been the easy societal way. Take the tablet, get on with it.
Yeah.
You know, but... And suppress the female even more, the female emotions even more, and the female power even more. It's always been an easy way to suppress us. Why did they never give it to men?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
There's always something else behind it to kind of get us to be more like men, you know, to get us on that rat race. And we're just, like I said before, we're just not designed like men. We're just not. We need to give ourselves more credit for being women. And really honor, like, what it is to have a womb and a cycle and these amazing emotions, you know.
Yeah, and I feel it's just a system itself as well. It's like not getting to the root of the problem. It's always on the surface, a quick solution, quick fixes, which is temporary but does a lot more damage in the long run.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Are you ready for these rapid fire questions?
Yes.
Let's do it. Okay. So what is your definition of universe, God, life?
My definition of God is what a great question. I guess my definition of God is the light that exists within you, within all of us, that we access through the spiritual eye of the heart. So not through the mind, not through anything outside of us, but through the vision of what we create through the spiritual eye of the heart. I would say that is our God light. We're all children of God, and God not being something that is outside of us, but God being something that we allowed to see ourselves in, you know.
Beautifully. Wow,
that makes sense.
Oh, amazing. Amazing. What do you think happens when you die?
I think that we get shown, like, our lives of, like, I think maybe, like, we get shown the debrief of our life. We get to look at it like a little film or something, maybe sit with some popcorn. And I think that it depends. I think we might have to go for healing. It depends how we have passed over. If we passed over from, like, trauma or pain, we might have to go to temples of healing, like soul healing temples. I know if I know, like with suicide, they go to a healing temple for their souls until they're ready to move on to the next kind of assignment. But I believe we just kind of either come back here and have to go over our lessons we haven't learned as a school. And that might be years and years and years to come. I do think we get a choice. And I also think there are other types of like planets or places we get to go to experience a different kind of soulful experience. But I think we all probably knew each other before we got here and had this all planned out. And
100%.
Yeah. 100%. So I don't believe we end. I think that we just continues as a soul. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a playground. It's like, you go into that playground, what's the contract?
I don't know if I can be bothered to go to Earth school again. Like, I might just give it another 7 years.
And you're just like, access denied.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so how do you define religion and spirituality?
This is so funny because on my new website, one of the quotes that I use is, spirituality does not come from religion, it comes from the soul.
Oh,
yeah,
I felt that. Really good, really good. What's the lesson that took you the longest to learn?
Wow, I don't know if any of my lessons have been fully learned yet.
Still ongoing.
If I'm being completely honest, like the layers, I don't think the layers ever really stop coming up until we're really ready to leave the earth. I think the one of the most challenging ones that I have are self-worth, I think, is a big one. Knowing that I'm worthy of love, being loved in all of who I am, and even in the parts of me that I think are really ugly, to be loved. And I think that comes with a lifetime of different relationships and experiences. I think one of the lessons I think I've done really well at, which I may have ticked off a little bit, is communication, like learning how to communicate well. And that has come with literally having to like learn a new language.
Wow.
And setting boundaries, I think that is another really great lesson. And I was learning them. And the one thing that helped me cement them was the divine cycle. It was my menstrual cycle and womb healing. Took me to the other level of that game.
What's
ding, ding,
strike?
Ding. You have passed. Next level.
I love it. Do you believe that people with horrible beginnings end up creating the best futures?
Oh, I think that people with the, I think we chose to come here to experience things as a child, because it's very different to having the freedom of choice as an adult. And I think this is really complex. I think everybody deserves, regardless of their childhood or hard beginning, I think everyone deserves the same amount of love and respect and honor and worthiness in this life. But I do believe that perhaps some of us who have experienced things in our childhood are given opportunities to like lead and to heal in that area, to be able to teach others. You know, because I teach the way that I teach, I can teach all the great stuff from the mistakes I made, but from my childhood that was taken out of my hands. It's kind of like there's where my most deep spiritual kind of teachings come from. So, and I think it depends what you're willing to sacrifice And if you're willing to really like step 2 feet in, you know, so yeah, I think everybody deserves the same equal amount of love. I've got beautiful friends who are so powerful and such powerful leaders in their work. And, you know, their childhoods have had their ups and downs. But, you know, I just think it can be just as difficult for them, because sometimes they don't have something to pinpoint their trauma on. And I think that could be quite challenging for people. Whereas I kind of know with my childhood, like a lot of where it's come from. So I think I'm actually kind of gifted and lucky in that sense.
Beautiful. I'm fully in present moment when?
I'm fully in the present moment when, I think when I'm out in nature.
Oh yeah, that's best answer ever.
It's just, even when I'm not in nature, but I'm meditating with nature.
Yeah,
that's presence. Like when I remember just the fact that the leaves don't really do much, but they just receive the light from the sun, and then that tree produces oxygen for me to breathe.
Yeah.
It's like,
look at the work that's going on there.
That's presence, yeah. You know?
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. Do you believe that there is an end to healing?
No, I don't believe that there's an end to it. No, I think healing isn't an object or a thing. I think it's like, it's just a being. It's just part of the way that we just be in life. It's part of the journey, but I think we can get trapped in that there's an end. There is no destination. The arrival point is just right now.
It's be okay. It's like be okay detached in a way where, well, it's gonna be like this. Just acceptance.
Yes. Exactly. Yeah. And I think it's awareness and acceptance. And you know, I know for me right now, what I've really been moving through is, you know, with everything that happened in my childhood, sure, I'm going to have to keep healing those layers as and when they come up. But it doesn't mean that my childhood's ever going to go away. And it doesn't have to. And it doesn't have to go away. And I don't have to disown it. But I just don't allow it to control me. I just am aware that it's part of who I am, and that's what I come with. You know, I'm not going to pretend like I don't come with it just to pretend like I'm healed from it, because I'm never going to know what the life's going to throw at me to trigger me. And that's part of what life is about, and it's part of dropping control.
Yeah, beautifully put.
Yeah.
The world needs more of what?
Oh, the world needs more communication.
Yes. So if there is someone who's going through adversity and dark night of the soul, spiritual awakening, and they're finding it hard to navigate through it, and they're not seeing the light at the end of the tunnel, what would you say to them?
I would say, I think let's go back to nature. I would say get into nature. And this is what I did. So I'm going to go off like a personal experience of when I was in that. Find yourself a place in nature that feels home for you. It could be a tree. It could be just a place. It could be a forest that's like an hour drive away. It could be somewhere that's local. It doesn't matter. I would firstly find a place in nature where you can go to for stillness, for peace. Nature is an amazing healer. When your feet are on the floor, the electromagnetic frequency from the earth, it just is, it's healing if you're like 20 minutes on the earth. And just allow yourself to be in the nature, and nature will show you the light of some sort. It absolutely will. And whether it's just a moment of bliss that you get in a second when you're sat there, that will be the light that you need to know it exists. Yeah.
Oh, beautifully put. Beautiful put. How can people contact you?
So you can contact me through my Instagram, my social media. I am also putting a new website up. So it's going to be on Friday the 13th. It launches. So that's just graceprosser.com. And yeah, you can see my offerings there. You can hook to me on Instagram. Yeah, come along if you want to come to some of my free online sessions, which I do. I do forest bathing retreats. I do obviously womb healing and menstrual cycle empowerment. I have a retreat coming up in Glastonbury in December, more about the divine feminine and things like that. So lots going on, lots of like online spiritual and also womb courses you can kind of dive into on your own in your own time. So yeah,
Amazing.
there's lots of ways you can kind of connect and yeah, and kind of feel into my work.
Amazing. Oh, thank you, Grace. It's just been absolute pleasure interviewing you. So much insight, so many nuggets to take away from this episode. I'm sure so many of our listeners will take it away. And I have personally, I've just probably had my whole life plan. It's like, oh, connecting the dots, right?
Yeah, it happens, doesn't
yeah.
it? It happens.
Yeah, so thank you.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
I'm glad we connected.
Yeah. We're going to be friends now.
Good.
Thank you for listening to this episode. I would absolutely love to know what your biggest takeaway from this conversation has been. You can share your thoughts on my Facebook or Instagram, Madhya Sosen. If you would like to watch this episode, then head over to my YouTube channel, Madhya Sosen. If you enjoyed this episode, then please do rate and share this with your family and friends, as that will help me out a lot. Thank you so much once again, and I will see you in the next episode.